This podcast is produced by the Center for Deployment Psychology at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. The views expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. In addition, references to any specific companies, products, processes, or services does not necessarily constitute or imply endorsement by the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. Welcome to CDP's podcast, Practical for Your Practice,
where we give you actionable intel to support what you do, one colleague to another. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to season six of Practical for Your Practice. I know.
Woohoo,
indeed. This is wild. This is episode one of season six, guys.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
How did we get here?
I can't even believe it, and it makes me feel old.
I'm
in the sixth season of my podcast life.
Version 6.0, I think, is what we're going to say.
That's nice.
Yeah,
that's
nice. Version 6.0. And truly, it's been really exciting even in between our podcast seasons, because we've been doing a little recon, if you will, about our listeners, about our stats and all of that. And we learned some interesting things about our podcast, right?
What did we learn?
So tell us, Corinne.
I'm going to tell you. So I was surprised to learn that we actually have listeners all over the world, which like sounds like I'm gloating, and I guess I am, but I'm just mostly so surprised because we never know. We never know who's listening. And in my mind, I was like, okay, well, it's just Kevin's mom listening.
She's very
to
well
us.
Traveled, apparently. I didn't know.
But hashtag number one fan.
Number one fan.
Mom, go home.
But it turns out it's not just Kevin's mom. We have listeners in Singapore, in Germany, in Russia. All over the globe.
Places I can't believe she's never been.
That you know of.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Australia.
Like all over.
Hi, everybody, in all those places.
Hello.
Yeah,
thank you. People are listening to us in all sorts of ways. Because again, I was imagining that Kevin's mom was listening to us, like on, you know, through her headphones, in her podcast, you know, app.
On her drive home.
Right, or while cooking dinner or something. And it turns out that people are listening to us on all kinds of devices. We have people listening to us on their smartwatches, which I like to imagine means we're like at the gym with them.
Ooh.
We're out farming with them, right?
So I'm
feeling more exercised already.
Like speed it up, slow pokes. If we're if we're inspiring your run, speed
you
it
can
up.
Do this.
Sprint to the finish line. Let's go. One more rep.
So I don't know. I was pretty excited to learn all of that and surprised.
Cool.
Like, really nice to know you're all listening. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you
for joining us for season six.
Absolutely. And I think that's so cool on the tail of how we wrapped up season five, which was probably my all-time favorite episode because it was really exciting to get fabulous questions and just connection to some of our listeners. So if you sent us a question or a comment, that meant the world to us. And we, you know, really loved being able to incorporate those into an episode. We want to continue to do that. We want this to be, you know, a community and a relationship. So we have kept open those means of communication through our SpeakPipe, where you can literally leave us a voicemail, and that could be a question for us, or if you have, you know, previous episodes, we've done confessionals, or what is your why, feel free to leave those. We'd love to incorporate that into our podcast. We also have our email, of course, that those are both in the show notes, Kevin. Mm-hmm. I will not say the SpeakPipe link.
I've been waiting since season five to have you say it again.
Nope, I don't do it anymore. Thank you very much. So please do be in touch. Don't wait to get in touch if you've got ideas for guests, all those things. We really, really want to do that. And that was a great, what is your why? Was a great theme last season. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to release the theme for this season.
A release? Announce? Are people ready? Are our listeners ready for this season?
I would
season?
Do a drum roll, except I can't. Okay.
Yeah.
Drum roll.
Kevin, what is our theme?
So our Well, our theme, it's funny, as we were kind of kicking around different themes, we recognized that maybe there's something significant about this being season six. Like, wow, who knew we would get this far? But also, like, there's some significance in military parlance, if you will. So, I don't know, have you guys ever heard of the term like got your six, or somebody who
Yes.
has your
Yeah.
six? Yeah. Like, it's kind of a military term that, and I'm sure it's used in other places too, but it actually goes back to World War I for, like, the brand new aviator program in World War I. Aviators in World War I would talk about, having each other six. And what that would refer to is like the points on a clock, an analog clock, where like 12 o'clock is straight ahead in front of you. And as you can imagine, like, 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock are to your left and right, respectively. The 6 o'clock position is behind you. And they would tell each other, I've got your six, or who's got my six, talking about like who's covering me or who's got my back. And in many ways, that's expanded from aviators. I think I've heard that term used in a lot of different places in the military and outside the military, but it refers to, like, who's got your six, or has got your six, refers to who has your back, like who is there for you as you're facing adversity, I think is what we've talked about. And so in honor of season six of the podcast, our theme this season, we've decided, is who's got your six, or I've got your six. Just really reflecting on who are those people that are supporting our work, because it can be tough sometimes, and recognizing and celebrating that, and seeing that as a resource, but also thinking about who are we, providing that service for? Whose six do we have? We can talk about that too. But so, who's got your six? That's our theme for the season.
Yeah, I love it. I'm really excited about this theme because, as we've talked about in previous seasons, many of us have not had an easy journey or a straightforward journey to get to where we're going, and the work that we do is really tough, and we need support, even though sometimes we feel embarrassed by that or we feel weird about it. So I'm excited that we're going to talk about this throughout the season. I do want to also point out that we made up some ground rules about this, right? Because well, we're going to spend this episode talking about who's had our sick, right? And but the rule was we can't name each other. Right,
Wait a minute.
I know.
Well, now I got to think of a new
Because
story.
that would be right. You better start working on that. That's too easy. And like, it's of course we have each other six. We've been doing this for six. Well, I haven't been doing it for six seasons. You've been doing it for six seasons.
It feels like six.
Thanks for that. Feels like an eternity. But we always have each other's backs, and it's too easy to be like, well, of course you all have my back. So that's going to be a
Really
rule.
prefer to have your nine. I'm not
All
sure.
right.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure what
No,
that means.
kidding.
Yeah. Do you just want my left side? Is that my good side?
Yes,
Is that
it's your good
my
side.
good side?
Listeners, if you could see, Corinne has always turned her head to the one direction.
But also with our guests moving forward, where, we don't want them to feel like they have to name somebody specific. And that's the other rule, that we are not going to use people's specific names
No
because this
names.
is like, I think Kevin, you said it best, that this is like an Academy Award speech and you don't want to forget somebody. How did you put it?
Well, I mean, we all watch the Academy Award speeches, right? And people start listing names, and then they say something like, "And I'm sure I've forgotten a lot of people's names." And then I'm sure there's a lot of people that are all offended because somehow they didn't make it into the long list of names. So, I mean, recognizing that all of us have lots of people who've had our six. And so it's not a competition of like who's the best, who's the one who is the most sixy, whatever that means. This is
Sixty.
instead. This is instead thinking about, an example of some time when somebody had our six, and not a competition. So if you aren't the one referred to in a story, you don't have to feel bad. I'm sure you're there too. But yeah, this is trying to make it comfortable to talk about those times without worrying about, is somebody going to take this wrong?
No.
So we thought we hosts would kick this off Who's Got Your Six, but we thought it'd be really nice to actually tell a story about a specific time when we felt that feeling of somebody having our six. So who wants to kick us off?
To say that sounds like a volunteering
Yeah,
panel
I
kind of a
think that
thing.
was you, Jenna.
Wow. Okay, excellent. All right, I'll kick us off. I think the hardest part about this was trying to figure out which, thankfully in my life, which of the many times I have had the
Sure.
experience of somebody having my sex or people having my sex. But I think one that stands out for me is when I'm a former Air Force psychologist, and when I was transitioning out of the military, I took my job with the Center for Deployment Psychology. Here I am, 18 years later, clearly really like it. And it was a rough transition. I had just had twins. I had twins who were 6 months old. There was a lot going on personally, and I wound up staying in the clinic I had worked in as active duty. And this is not going to be so anonymous. I won't use names, but the head of our center at the time was really, really instrumental. I was feeling like I was facing a ton of adversity, and like personally, but then also professionally, I was being trained in prolonged exposure therapy, and I was seeing clients to kind of gain some clinical experience doing that. But he really needed us to be able to like support teaching it as well pretty quickly, which was hard to do, right? Like talk about imposter syndrome. You're like, what? And his con and so like you know I kind of felt like I was being thrown into this you know sort of this battle, if you will, of going out and disseminating and training. And it was really scary. Like I was professionally really challenged. I had been you know supervising interns and doing work that I was very familiar with, and here I was now like doing trainings in front of large groups of people in a very different way than I had, you know, doing clinical work and supervising.
So I'm
And
imagining you, Jen, at the beginning of these workshops saying things like, "This is not my first time doing PE," or
I think I just avoided all of that. But I can tell you that my suds, like I remember distinctly the first time I trained it, and this individual was like, "You've got this, you're gonna be great, pick a section. You know, you just got to lean in and do it." Like such an exposure therapist, right? And you know, sort of kicked me into it, and I came out the other side. I don't even remember it. I probably like blacked out during it. My suds were at 100, and you know, and I like looked. I remember looking to him and being like, you know, sort of this pathetic look of like, "Was it okay?" And he, you know, and in his style, he was like, "You did just fine," you know, high praise. And then we did it again, and we did it again, and I grew so much. I mean, just like his belief in me that I could step into this role and I could, you know, take what I had learned and apply it quickly. And you know, he trusted me, and I could not have done that if I did not feel like he really had my six. And then, you know, kind of had proceeded to have a very, you know, still have a great relationship with him, but you know, had many personal family crises that you know we all have in our
Don't
lives,
we
because
all?
we're human beings too. But some fairly significant ones occurred, from things that happened with my parents to my children to my health eventually. And every single thing that came up, the only sense I had from this individual was, "I'm here, we've got you, you've got this. Do what you need to do." And it has made all the difference in the world and in my professional development and in my personal development. And I've learned so much, and it made me want to have other people's sixes so much, like that being modeled for me, I feel like has been really valuable in shaping who I want to be as, you know, a supervisor or, you know, somebody in a supporting role, et cetera. So that's my sixth story, and you can all pretty much figure out who that is. So,
Oh, I think we all know, and maybe many of our listeners know. And I think that's the thing that strikes me too, is just it wasn't a one-time event, right? Like it occurred over the years, over and over again. It was not a just a one-time behavior. Like it was part of who this person was. And the other thing that really stood out to me is just is absolutely is. I don't mean to speak of
He
this person in
retired,
the
but he's
past
still
tense,
around.
is, and just the coolness of, I mean, like, it's really cool when you recognize those people that not only are that for you, but inspire you to be that for other people. That really hit me when you were talking about that.
And I think going back to the meaning of it, like you think about units and you think about, you know, military culture and service members, it's that like it they take it forward, right? Like you have their somebody has their six, and then they want to have somebody else's six, and it's part of that community. So okay, I'll be quiet now.
No,
Wow, love that
somebody else
story.
go. I don't know how I can live up to that. Corinne, maybe you
I
should go.
well, sure. Yes, I'll go because I feel like my story is somewhat similar. Hopefully not boring because it's somewhat similar, but somewhat similar in that when I was thinking about who has my six, I mean, I certainly thought about all the people who've had my purely personal six, you know, for
Yes.
personal
Sure,
issues. But
yeah.
the person that really stuck out to me as somebody who started with having my six professionally and then kind of again over the course of many years, that sort of has blurred, those lines have blurred. And now I trust this person both with kind of my personal six and my professional six. So anyway, the person I'm thinking about is a professor that I had in grad school who ended up being a mentor. And it started out kind of funny because when I was accepted into grad school, I specifically wanted to work with this person because this person had experience in evidence-based treatments for trauma, and that's, you know, that's what I
Yeah.
wanted to do from the outset. So that's who I wanted to work with. And when I first approached him about being my clinical supervisor, he blew me off completely and was like, no, I don't have time for another supervisor. And I do, you know, 20 something years later, I like to remind him of that every
I
opportunity that I
love
get.
that.
Yeah. It's because I was like, I'm sorry, did you just say no to me? Well, now
Right.
you have to
Doubling
be
down.
exactly
This is
right.
so off-brand, I'm
I
confused.
know. So unlike me. So that's exactly what I did. And he did become my supervisor down the road, was my dissertation chair, et cetera. So we worked together quite a bit, or he supervised me and guided me quite a bit. And then that continued after grad school. And really anytime I had to make decisions about what comes next, you know, what kind of clinical experiences do I pursue? Should I take this job versus that job? Where, you know, where's my skill set? Where am I able to stretch? These were always times that I went back to him and ran it by him, and he always had really honest but compassionate advice. So and you
Yeah.
know, I won't repeat some of the things that he said to me because those were curse words. Those included curse words, but they were always
Oh,
very
man.
honest. I know. They were
Again,
very,
on brand.
very honest, and I appreciated them. And as I said, like over time, I've come to trust his guidance. And then, Jenna, like you said, life happened. So personal
Yeah.
life happened, and that often led to some bumps in the road in what I thought was going to be a fairly straightforward professional path. You know, and there were times that I had to ask, like, well, this happened in my life, and I don't feel able to be present in my clinical work. Like, what do I do about that? Do I take a
Right.
break? What do I do? And he was able to guide me with that. Or times when it's like, I have this great work opportunity, but I also have these financial obligations, and this job is not going to pay enough money. What do I do? Do I just say no? And in all of those areas, he's able to ask some really thoughtful, thought-provoking questions, and again, give honest, compassionate advice. And it has been so helpful. And I really feel like he's had my six throughout. I'm so grateful for it, even though he refused me initially.
So it works out.
It works out. And I'll say, you know, Jenna, you kind of wrapped up your story so nicely by mentioning that it inspired you to have other people six. And in it, what's actually happened with us, which has been cool, that in some ways it's become a mutual support system. So,
That's great.
you know, he's still very much my senior because he's old. So he's very much my senior, but there have been times that he's asked me, you know, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And is the timing right for this? And I've been so grateful to be able to give a little bit back and share a little bit of
Yeah.
insight as well. It's made me feel like a better, more competent clinician.
It's like that journey from mentee to colleague, right? Like,
Yeah.
and when and I feel the same way. And it's funny, Karen, because the initial experience I had with my individual when I was being hired, the person who had interviewed me introduced me to this individual, and his reaction to me was, well, she doesn't have two heads. So it was very similar. And like, I was like, all, you know, wide-eyed
Thanks.
and excited. And I'm like, oh,
Right.
Wait a second. You're gonna know I have way more than no two heads, not having two.
I
Whatever.
have five heads. You're gonna
I
learn. You're gonna
you are gonna
learn.
be amazed
Love
by
them
me.
all.
So that's how you get Corinne and I interested.
Say
You
no,
just say no,
and
make
then
us
buckle
feel
up.
like, you know, we're
I'm
nothing
taking
special. Watch
notes.
out. Yeah.
Taking notes that I'm gonna need in the future. I was
And
struck by
Kevin,
the
you're gonna have to
fact.
listen though, and that would be hard.
Oh,
Oh,
what?
I'm kidding.
No, I think it's great that a lot of times these relationships start off in one realm and kind of move to the other, right? You started professionally and now it's kind of more personal and more mutual. And I guess the person I'm thinking about kind of started the same way, not so much like a mentor supervisor, but kind of a colleague, like classmate. So we kind of met in grad school. In fact, we joke that we met, it was during interviews for whether or not we were even going to be accepted to grad school. And so like I've known this person longer than I've known my spouse kind of thing. And like she gets all uncomfortable with that sometimes. But so we started as classmates, like we were going to classes together and doing projects together and very kind of, studying for exams and everything.
Like a
But
grad
it's
school battle buddy.
really it was, and in fact we had a couple more folks, and this particular individual has it's kind of, it's endured and it's strengthened over time and become, even more kind of more of a personal six. So the story I was going to tell, and it's just one out of so many examples, a little more recent, I guess, than the stories you've been sharing. So I think if y'all had been listening to our season, I think it was last season, season five, when we talked about like aftercare for caregivers when there's like a suicide attempt by a teenager or a youth, like that was so personally relevant to me, like right at that time. And I don't want to disclose too many details and break confidentiality, but my own kid was just going through that, had just attempted suicide, and we were in that at the time we recorded that episode. We're dealing with like hospitalization and with all of the ways we were trying to secure the home and getting into care and therapy and establishing medication, like all sorts of things that were just wild, right? So on one hand, there was so much time that had to be invested away from work, just, and I'm thinking like 2, 3 weeks of just like I'm not coming to work, I'm
And even if I'm here, I'm not here.
that's right. And so things could fall apart, and right now I don't even care. Of course I cared, but I kind of didn't care. But and then at the same time, I had a private practice, and so professionally there were a lot of obligations that were just not going to be met. And at the same time too, it was probably even more about like kind of personal reflections, maybe even more like criticisms of myself. Like I had a lot of thoughts that I, looking back, are probably really normal of like, crap, I'm supposed to be an expert at this. Like I'm supposed to know something about this. I'm supposed to have some answers about how do we recognize this? How do we prevent this? What's the right things to do? And how does this happen if I'm supposed to know this stuff?
It's so funny that we think we're supposed to be bulletproof to that, because I think Corinne and I both, like, we've all had this experience of, like, I am in this field. I should know better.
I should have seen the
I should have
signs. I should
seen, I
have
should have,
known, right? And I should be able to handle this. So this shouldn't be bothering me as much as it is.
I shouldn't be having this kind of reaction to it too, because whatever I've got.
I read the textbook. I know, like, this shouldn't bother
Exactly.
me.
Well, I even thought about, like I have more insight than perhaps the average parent does, and therefore maybe shouldn't feel as intense about this, right? Because I can't imagine parents who aren't prepared, in the way that we are, perhaps, to deal with some of that stuff, dealing with it too, because it was pretty hellish, and then and like, of course, I also recognize like it's not about me. Like, I mean, it is, but it's also not. That's not the only thing that's important. So it was pretty awful, as you would expect all around. And so this individual that I'm thinking of, this person who really has my six, it wasn't that, I called them and said, I'm going to be missing meetings. Can you cover? Because they actually didn't work in the same agency anymore. We have worked in the same agency in the past, but it was more of just like, He would call and just be like, how are you doing with this? Like, what's happening? And it felt like a safe space to just kind of work through all of that stuff I was just talking about. Like, how in the hell does this happen to somebody who should know what to do? Like feeling pretty, I remember even having a conversation. It was a long conversation of just like, how do I even credibly continue to see patients? Clearly, I don't know what I'm doing. What do I have to offer them? And it was hard. And a lot of support. None of this like, come on, no, you know more stuff than that. It was, just letting that be and sitting with that and kind
Sitting
of
with it, yeah.
reflecting on it and what does that mean? And that was so much more helpful, I think, than just advice giving and cheerleading and that kind of thing. While at the same time also too, at the right times, kind of processing with, well, what are the practical things to be doing now as well? Like
Yeah.
canceling meetings and appointments with clients and those kinds of things. So it was both a professional, help, but also a really important personal help all at the same time, all coming from the same person, and just was so important and meaningful to get through, the immediate shock of that situation, and really for the ongoing, there's always ongoing things from that too, securing the home and just the there's going to be
Yeah.
difficult days and all of that stuff too. So that's the story that I'm reminded of, and one out of a million from this one person. And then, of course, lots of other people that have had my six over the years. But I think about that as, like a great example of somebody having my six facing adversity, in a really both professional and personal way.
I was just thinking about, I'm really glad you told that story, Kevin, and definitely a difficult one
Yes.
to tell. And I've been there. So,
Right.
I think what was interesting about all of our stories, very different, well, Corinne and I are a little more similar, but different stories. Not only did these people help us face adversity, but they kind of helped shake off the imposter syndrome thing for us too. Like their belief in us, their steadying, of us, helped us because, I mean, imposter syndrome, obviously, kind of professionally for or what we're able to handle, but then also, Kevin, in your story, like, I'm in this field, what kind of what am I? And again, I have had that exact same thought. I have no business being in this business. And that person to shake you and be like, you're like even better for this business because of this, even though it doesn't feel like that at the time, how much you learn. So, that seemed to be a theme that was striking to me across our sixes is, believing in us when we maybe our belief was shaken in ourselves.
Yeah, not just you messed up, let me help put you back together, but more of like helping you to see value of the experience.
Well, one thing that stood out to me related to that is that I wonder if the longevity of the relationships helped with that, with because in the sense that all three individuals that we talked about are people who've known us for a long time. And I wonder if when it, when adversity does strike and things come up, whether, that's part of what's really helpful is having somebody who's known you kind of at your best and at your worst and can. When it comes to shaking off imposter syndrome, like you talked about, Jenna, for me at least, it's much more reassuring when I know that the person advising me knows me, has some data, right? Has 20 years worth of data. That means a lot more than somebody who hardly knows me saying, no, you'll be great. It'll be great. You'll be fine, right? So that also stood out to me.
Well, and it makes me wonder too. Like, I wonder if we have some listeners who are thinking about, well, who's got my six? And they're thinking about, how do I cultivate that kind of relationship or those relationships? Does it have to be 20 years down the road before it starts paying off? And I hate to make it transactional, but like, what are your thoughts? Like, I mean, we always do actionable intel. What are some things about developing those relationships?
Well, the thing that I was going to say for actionable intel is don't take no. I mean, so I think like
Fight.
if you fight, yeah. I mean, I think if you want to, if you want to be, in the front of that well, I was going to say, if you want to be in that unit, if you want to be a part of, have membership in something that you think can sort of be supportive and have your back at, or you want to work with somebody that you think you can learn from or get an experience that you think you want to have, and to have the opportunity to cultivate the relationships to, for people to have your sex, and you're told, or, no, or maybe sort of like, okay, I guess, dig in and know the value you're bringing into that, and fight for that relationship, because you never know where ultimately it can lead you. So I would say,
Although, so I love that because, both you and I are don't take no for answers. So I totally buy that fight. I totally agree with that fight. But I feel like I also want to put a limit on that. Like, if somebody doesn't recognize your value, if some organization doesn't recognize your value and you know it, then, you
absolutely.
after you've heard no for the third time or the second, whatever it is to you, when you're not being valued or respected, there is some other place, some other
Value
person that will
yourself.
value you
Correct.
as much as you deserve to be valued.
Yes, that is a good point. With the caveat that Carmen gave, yes. Fight for a certain amount of time.
I guess my suggestion for actionable intel would be similar, and that is that it's okay to ask for help. Like, I think we're trained, and I don't mean just psychologists. I know the three of us are psychologists, but we have listeners that are social workers, LPCs, nurses. I mean, like, the whole mental health family.
Kevin's mom.
My mom, yeah. We're all trained to, I think, appear solid and stoic, and we can handle all things. And there's a certain inauthenticity to that, right? Like when we have to pretend that we've got it all together, that really undercuts the fact that we're humans and we're having a real human experience. And so I think, sometimes giving ourselves permission to be authentic and selectively, right? Like, don't use your therapy clients as your sounding board. That's not what it's for. But find those places or cultivate those relationships where it's okay. Like, give yourself permission to ask for help, and that it's okay to be real, and it's okay to have real emotions. Just like we tell our clients, like, pretty much all the advice we tell our clients applies to us because we're people too. So give yourself permission.
I would even add to that. I mean, it's dangerous to not acknowledge that you have vulnerabilities and limits. It makes you a worse practitioner. It makes you worse at everything if you're not willing to acknowledge that you have limits, that you have vulnerabilities, that you need help. In our ethics world, that call, we call that impaired professionals,
I
right?
mean, and the richest, most rewarding relationships that I've ever allowed myself to have are the ones where I'm not trying to, project a particular image and just being. So that's a lesson that should be obvious, but for me, it's one that I've learned, the hard way, if you will.
So sounds like, don't take no with limits, that if you are kind of based on our stories, that this was a relationship that was going to ultimately be good for us, and we hung in there and it worked out. But don't go too far with that. And we all have these vulnerabilities, and part of being an ethical provider even is to recognize when we've taken some hard hits, and we really need people to have our six and take care of us, and our duties, or whatever we need to do to make sure that we can get back to the front of the fight. So I love those.
And I know you all have my six, and I've got yours.
You know what? I am so lucky. So it's hard not to list the 3,000 times you all have had my six. So
Same. This will be a much
same.
longer episode.
Same, right? Those will be episodes 2 through 12 of this season, right? All the times that we had each other.
To just get
Nah,
started.
yeah, let's not do that. So definitely look forward this season to great stories of, when people have had folks six in with our guests, and we are really grateful for all of you listening. And please do share with us your stories, your questions on SpeakPipe, on the email as well.
That's right. Until then,
Stay curious
and mind your EBPs.
remember, we love hearing from our listeners, so leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send us an email. Both can be found in our show notes. Our theme music is Failed Attempts by Nitro, and our administrative assistant is Bree Mercer.
Thanks for listening to Practical for Your Practice.
If you like what you're hearing, please feel free to follow us, rate this episode, and share it with others.
Until next time.